This has been such a great evening, Greg. I really had no idea that Five Guys had a wine list.
Well, I know the sommelier at that one. He put aside the apple Pinot Grigio for me. Hey, this is my apartment. Would you like to come in for a cup of tea?
Sure, why not?
First, I have to ask Mr. Scroopy if it's okay.
Mr. who?
Mr. Scroopy. He's my stuffed animal. He's a bashful bunny with floppy ears. I've had him since I was 7.
And you have to ask him if I can come in?
Well, it's his space too. Wait here.
It's that girl I was talking about. She's very nice. I think you'd like her. Sure, I can hold you up to the peephole so you can look out at her. See?
He says he's not feeling all that great. He says maybe you could come back on Sunday afternoon.
Greg, he didn't say anything. I mean, we're not going to organize our behavior around the wishes of some old toy, are we?
You don't understand.
Okay, bring this thing out where I can see it.
Well, I can try. Here he is.
Oh, God, Greg, he stinks to high heaven.
Is that true, Mr. Scroopy? Is it time for one of those woolite baths like the one you had in 1997? You hated that one, didn't you, Mr. Scroopy?
Greg, this is it's a wagon load of crazy.
Wait, he wants to say something to you.
Yeah? I hadn't thought of it that way. Sure, yeah, I love old westerns. Okay, I'll come over on Sunday and watch My Darling Clementine with you guys.
See how reasonable Mr. Scroopy is?
Totally. You know, for a second, I thought you'd really gone off your rocker. Today on the show, our mysterious ties to stuffed animals. And now, his old Cabbage Patch Kid was last seen hustling for change outside a San Francisco bus terminal. Colin McEnroe.
You know, I tried with that Cabbage Patch Kid, but he was a bad seed. I couldn't control him. That's the way it was. Actually, no, Cabbage Patch Kids have this huge Connecticut history. They actually were first made by Coleco, which is a company located in Bloomfield. I think they were eventually kind of licensed out or sold out after Coleco went to Chapter 11, were made by some of the bigger companies. Anyway, they're just, you know, Cabbage Patch Kids, one part of a big, huge picture. We're going to be talking about stuffed animals today, about our strange relationships to stuffed animals. You just heard one such strange relationship. In just a second, you're going to meet Mark Nixon, who has chronicled in a really amazing way the qualities of these stuffed animals once they've been owned for a long time and are much loved, to steal the title of his book. Before I even introduce you to Mark, who's going to join us from Ireland, from Dublin, actually, let's hear. We actually set up a phone line so that people can call up and tell us about their stuffed animals, their other stuffed toys. Let's hear a story about a Cabbage Patch Kid.
I was very, very young at the height of the Cabbage Patch craze, and my parents couldn't find me one. So when I was in Texas visiting family, my aunt took me to the store, and she managed to find one lone Cabbage Patch who had been returned. So she quickly bought him for me. And his name is Spencer Willie. I still have him. I'm 32. He sleeps in the guest room. So we get in the car on the way home from the store, and she takes him out of the box for me. And I immediately threw up on him.
Right. There were a lot of rumors about Cabbage Patch Kids, too. I think they came with a birth certificate when you adopted them. They came with a birth certificate. There were rumors that if you sent them back to the factory because they were damaged, they would be issued a death certificate. That was sort of an urban legend. And the other urban legend was that they were a part of a secret plan by the U.S. government to prepare us for mutated and therefore misshapen children in the event of a nuclear catastrophe. That was an urban legend about them. But enough about Cabbage Patch Kids. It's time to meet Mark Nixon. He's the author, photographer of Much Love, a book that documents photographs of worn-out stuffed animals, and some of them are worn out indeed. Mark Nixon, these are amazing photographs. It's sort of a shame that this is a radio show, because these really are amazing photographs, and on our website we'll link to some of them. But there's this word numinous, you know, the word that suggests the presence of an almost divine or otherworldly presence. A lot of these stuffed animals, these old, frayed, tattered, careworn stuffed animals, they almost seem to have some kind of living thing shining through them.
Mm. Hi, Colin.
Hi, Mark.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, when I started photographing them, I felt, not with all of them, but certainly with some of them, they had a presence. You know, while I was shooting them, I felt there was something there, some communication going back and forward between us as I photographed them. I'm a portrait photographer, so I photographed them in the same kind of way I would photograph someone for a portrait. So it was they definitely felt like there was a dialogue going back and forward sometimes. And there was one in particular, and it was the only one it happened to. And it was kind of late one night. I was there in the studio alone, and I was photographing. I turned around, and it was the only one actually ever kind of scared me a bit. Some other people have seen some of them, and they think they're creepy or whatever. But the people who own them love them very much. But this one, you wouldn't really to look at it. There was nothing really scary about it. But there was just something that just a chill kind of ran through me. Then it was the only one. It's kind of a bit creepy, that one.
By the way, as we go along here, if you have a stuffed animal story, you need to get off your furry chest. It's 860-275-7266, 860-275-7266. You may also tweet us. You can tweet Greg, our tweetmaster, and Mr. Scroopy, his bunny rabbit, at WNPR Colin as we're going along here. So, you know, one thing, as I read the little narratives, Mark, that accompany your photographs, one thing that occurred to me is that, you know, we use the word transitional object sometimes to talk about a stuffed animal, and it means a lot of different things. But I hadn't really thought about the fact that in some ways, a stuffed animal is a transitional object that sleeps with you during the period of your life when really nobody's going to sleep with you, right? I mean, as you're going to get older, ideally you will find a mate and you will sleep with that person. But the one consistent thread that ran through your narratives was people sleep with these, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, a lot of married people, it's funny. There's one of the bears in the book belongs to the wife of a well-known radio presenter here, Tom Dunn. And he talks about it all the time on his radio show and said it's the third person in their marriage. The same way, you know, Princess Diana said that Camilla was the third person in her marriage.
Mm-hmm.
This bear, George, is the third person in his marriage, and his wife has to sleep with it every night.
Well, hopefully there aren't the kinds of conversations that were going on between Camilla and Prince Charles. Anyway, once you started this project, you photographed, I think, 60 bears initially in total and featured 20 to 30 of them. Once they went up on your website, you started to get contacted by other people, right? Other people wanted to be part of this. Tell me more about that.
Yeah. Well, I don't mean to correct you, but I photographed probably 140,
okay,
and there's about 65 in the book. I tell you how it started from the beginning?
Yeah, go ahead. That's a good idea.
It started just as a very simple idea. I have a studio with a gallery space at the front, so occasionally I'll put on an exhibition of something other than, you know, portraits. So I saw how close my own son Callum was with his Peter Rabbit. You know, how he'd squeezed it with delight when he was happy, and he buried his nose in it while he was sucking his thumb, and he just had to sleep with it every night. And something in that, just some vague memory of my own panda bear that I had as a child. And I thought, well, I'll bring it into the studio and photograph his Peter Rabbit as a portrait and see what happens. So when I'd done that, I decided this would make a good exhibition for the studio. So I put the call out to my clients and had a teddy day. So there's about 40 come in that day. And I thought it would be mostly children. But it turned out, I'd say over half were adults. And while I was photographing them, they were telling my receptionist these amazing stories or really funny tales about their teddy bear. So I got her to start writing them down. And so that's how it started. And I just photographed every now and again. You know, I'd photograph a few more. finally, I had enough for the exhibition, and once I had the opening, I put it online, and it just went crazy. It went viral immediately. Within the first month, there was, I think, 1.5 million hits, and 3 months, 4.5 million. And all these blogs and websites started picking it up all over the world, you know, from China to Peru, all over the States, all over Europe. It was crazy. So just the very, you know, a few months later, just one day I was thinking, you know, I wonder if I could make a book. And that very day, an email came in from Abrams Books in New York, and they said, we've all fallen in love with your project in the office, and we'd love to turn it into a book. So that's how it came about.
The photographs are remarkable, and I heard that some people contacted you and wanted to have their animals, their stuffed animals, photographed, but then realized that you don't make house calls and that their stuffed animals would have to be shipped, and they didn't like that idea, right?
No, exactly. I mean, I'd every day I come in and I open up my emails, and there's more photographs of people's much loved bears. And originally, yeah, I saw some really great ones that I would love to photograph, but because they're so close to them, the people, they won't part with them, and they're not going to trust, you know, one of the carriers to deliver it and return it. But some people did. So I had some sent from Germany, Canada, the States, and they appeared in the book as well.
Well, of
and
course,
they all got back safe.
Of course, how could you part with an animal if you need that animal to sleep with you every night?
Yeah.
Let's hear the story also from our voicemail project of Doggy.
I have had the same favorite stuffed animal since I was one. I got him for my first birthday and very creatively named him Doggy because he's a stuffed dog. He used to be about 3 times bigger than me, and now he's easily 10 times smaller than me. He's pretty much a tiny little matted ball of fur now, but I still sleep with him every night, and it's been 22 years. I've also taken him all over the world every time I go traveling. Now he's getting a little bit old to go traveling, but he's seen Europe, he has seen Asia, he has seen parts of Africa. I even took him to summer camp and then promptly hid him under the bed when I was worried that my campers as a counselor would make fun of me. So he's been all over the place. I really love him. I'm really attached. I secretly think he's alive. I've never had a real pet. It's just been me and this little stuffed dog. So someday when I have a real pet, maybe I'll change my mind. But for now, he seems like he's my best friend, and I really love him.
All right, Mark Nixon, so much there in that story. I'm sure so much that you've already heard before. But
many times.
One of the things that's in there is, you know, she says, I think he's just a kind of a matted ball of fur at this point. One thing that's clear from your book is that there's almost no such thing as a stuffed animal that's not viable anymore to somebody. There's a sort of furless bear in your book that's missing one of its arms. And tell us about that bear.
Oh, missing an arm. There's one missing a leg. Which one was missing an arm?
I think it's the one that had belonged to two different people, two different brothers.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Is it on the back of the book as well, that one?
Not sure. But I could be conflating bears here too, but I think it might also be the bear. I know that there was one bear that was named after Aloysius, who's the famously the bear that that Sebastian Flight, the character in Brideshead Revisited, Evelyn Waugh's novel. As an adult, he actually carries around a teddy bear. It's either an affectation or more likely a sign of the huge psychological damage that's been done to Sebastian. Go ahead.
Yeah. That's the one I was thinking of. Again, it's funny because I'm sitting here in Donnybrook in RTE studios, and this is where a radio presenter called Jerry Ryan worked from every day, Monday to Friday, 3 hours a day, and I listened to him for 22 years, and he felt like he was part of my family, one of my friends. He lived just around the corner from my studio. I'd see him passing the window sometimes, but I never spoke to him. And he died suddenly a few years ago. And it was really like a death in the family. And I still have that feeling. And it wasn't just a passing thing. But I mean, the whole country basically went into mourning. But I really felt a strong attachment to him. So I went in. There's a place called the Teddy Bear Hospital in Dublin where they repair teddy bears or destroy them, as I would say, because they take away that great, much loved look, and they give it, looks like a brand new bear. So the woman was showing me all these the restorations that they'd done, and I was horrified. They looked much better before she started. But she told me about Jerry's teddy bear, which was called One-Eyed Ted, stroke Aloysius. He called it both. And again, because he'd lived around the corner, I thought, well, I'd just go and ask his wife. So I sent a letter. I didn't want to intrude. So I sent a letter, and a couple of months went by, and I thought, well, they obviously don't want to have anything to do with it. And all of a sudden she rang me and said, sorry, it was in a pile of junk mail and she'd only just read it. And yeah, it'd be no problem. That's his daughter Babette's had it now. So I'm trying to see it, and it's the cutest little thing, a tiny little thing, like you say, missing one arm. And she had it in this little bed with another equally small teddy that was missing the other arm. So the two of them together kind of had one good arm each. And the other little teddy had a T-shirt on it with her dad on the T-shirt, a photo of her dad, you know, that someone must have given her years ago. So that's a very special one. When I got that one, I kind of started taking the whole project seriously. That one, and it's still probably my favorite one.
You know, as we started to think about this show, and we have to give our intern Katie Pikus a lot of credit for sort of tipping us off to this idea, and really she conceived of this idea. I started looking around and realizing that there's been something of a revolution in stuffed animals. I mean, just here in America, because of companies like Vermont Teddy Bear and Build-A-Bear, they've really become kind of this high-end product in some cases. And then even some of the traditionalists like Gund, you know, they now make not just bears and groundhogs and things like that. They make Totoro, you know, Japanese anime characters and all kinds of things that really don't actually have a correspondent out there in the animal world. But your book seems to be really more about these really primal kinds of bears, right? They're not linked to a character in a movie. They're not based on some sort of fanciful concept. They're a bear or a dog or a panda in your own personal case, right?
There were a couple of kind of, well, there was a Pooh Bear and there was an Eeyore, but because the book company didn't want to deal with Disney, who seemingly have the rights to those, although I don't know why, but there you go. They were just, you know, they didn't go in the book. But I'm amazed actually at the variety of bears and stuffed toys there are out there. You know, after photographing so many of them, there was very few repeats. You know, they're all different. So,
you know, I was watching a video about the German company Steiff, where I think in 2008 they made an interesting decision. They had outsourced most of their factory work to China, and they realized that somehow or other, you know, despite the fact that Chinese factories can do work to order pretty specifically, that they weren't there's some quality that we associate with a Steiff bear or with a certain kind of Western stuffed animal in general that they weren't getting, and they actually had to make the decision at considerable expense to shut down that operation, bring the whole thing back to Germany, because apparently only there could the certain qualities that show up, those hard to describe qualities, be actually brought to life, so to speak, in a stuffed bear.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned the word primal as well, and I definitely think that there is something very primal about it, and I think it might be to do with the fact that, you know, the babies are given these things before speech, before they can talk. So this is all, you know, these are our very earliest memories and emotions, you know, and they're just so deeply buried within us that I think with some people that maybe there's some kind of imprinting going on with them, you know, the way, you know, baby ducks will follow around after a, you know, a human, think of it as its parent. There might be something like that going on as well with the very earliest memories.
Let me, I think imprinting, by the way, is exactly the right word, just like a baby duck. Let's grab a call here from Cherry in Hamden. Hi, Cherry.
Hi, I have a comment and a question. My family, it actually started when we were given a squirrel many years ago because my husband really likes squirrels, a little stuffed squirrel. And then we were given more and more and more squirrels, and then when we travel, we would pick them up as souvenirs and so on. Well, we started eventually making the voices so that these squirrels would start talking with each other and talking to us. And my son likes hippos, so hippos became part of this, and our whole family got involved in this. And mostly it's me and my son. My husband just mostly listens. But we still make the voices, and they still all talk to each other, and we put them to bed at night. And it's like we're kind of addicted to this almost, or we just enjoy it as a fun, entertaining activity. I'm not quite sure, but...
And so your question is, are you clinically insane?
Is this okay? Do other people do this? We recently took one squirrel along to Germany on a trip and actually bought a little pair of lederhosen for him.
Okay, we're getting into a weird area now, Cherry.
So, some of my relatives think it's a bit wacko, but I would like to know if other people do this and how they got started, if they do, and if it's, you know, quite common. Or
I'm going to let Mark answer this question, although the one thing I would say is I think it's basically okay so far. If the squirrels start talking back to you, then
they
I think you've got a problem.
They talk back to us. We talk with them. I make the voices. I must be a pretty good actress, I think, because I make all these voices for all these different creatures, and my son does as well. So, yeah, that does go on.
All right, Mark, it's your turn.
Well, yeah, you're not alone, Cherry.
Oh, thank God, that's a relief.
Well, that was, you know, that's been the thing, that's been a theme really from the beginning is people have told me that, you know, you just get this feeling that it's something that they were kind of keeping as a secret, you know, that they were almost embarrassed to tell anybody about. And all of a sudden with the book, they feel it's okay. They can talk about their teddy love or whatever. But no, people are really, really, really attached. There's, in fact, I brought in an email I got recently, and I just read you a bit of this because I think he sums it up really well. It's from a guy in New York, and unusual. I mean, a lot of them, I have to say, are women, but there are some men, and maybe some men, they're just, you know, they don't want to admit to having a teddy bear or something like that. But so it's mostly women. But this is from a guy. He said he's a working artist. And he said during his email, he said, it's easy to dismiss the connection an adult has with a teddy bear as mere nostalgia with warm childhood feelings, a retreat into a safer, simpler time. But to me, these two bears have accumulated a resonance that spirals outwards beyond even my love for my family. They connect me with my parents and with my daughter. And more than that, they have somehow been imbued with depth of meaning for me, a meaning that I can't articulate, but know is there. And whenever we find meaning in the world, that is a place to be treasured.
That's it's a perfect description, imbued with a meaning, you know, that almost can't be described. We're going to take a little break. I should tell you that towards the end of the show, and this is something we had to pre-record because of the time difference, but, you know, and this may reassure Cherry, too. I love Japan and I love Japanese people, but if you take something like this and you think you've got kind of a crazy take on it, they'll always go you one better. So we did a talk at the end of the show. You'll hear a conversation with a travel agent who arranges trips for stuffed animals. The owners do not go on the trips, only the stuffed animals. The owners get photographs. So anyway, but we've got a lot of ground to cover before that. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back with more of Mark Nixon and another guest besides. Always gentle as a
I still have Benny, my childhood teddy bear, and I think he has survived for about 50 years because he's stiff and hard, not soft and cuddly. And he also has a sound mechanism inside that sounds like this. Somewhere around the late 1960s, in the middle of the night on my family's annual train trip from New York City to Chicago visiting my grandparents, I was trying to sleep and kept dropping Benny, picking him up, falling asleep, dropping him, and so on, triggering the sound mechanism. I was told that people started alerting the conductor to the fact that they thought a goat or sheep was on the train. And the conductor said it was a mystery for a pretty long time, but he eventually saw me with his flashlight, heard the sound, and solved the mystery. I don't sleep with Benny anymore, but he sits in my art studio and listens to a lot of NPR with me while I work. And he really likes the Colin McEnroe Show and Car Talk.
Why a bear makes that noise is a whole separate question. Also, I'd just like to point out to the owner of Benny that we checked our records, and Benny has not participated in any of our WNPR pledge drives. So it's time for Benny to get that credit card out, assuming he has one. All right, Mark Nixon is with us. He's the author, photographer of Much Love, a book that documents photographs of worn-out stuffed animals. And he's become something of a stuffed animal scholar in the process. In just a second, you'll also meet the founder of a project that gets stuffed animals to children who are victims of traumatic events. Mark Nixon, one thing that one of your quests, as I understand it, in pulling the book together, was to get a stuffed animal belonging to Bono. Very quickly, tell us that story.
Okay. When I first decided to do the exhibition, I thought, if I can get Bono's bear, if I can get his, I can get anybody's, because then I can go and say, well, Bono's taking part, you know. So Dublin, as you know, is a small town, and you know, eventually you're going to bump into Bono somewhere, sometime. But about a year and a half went past, and I still hadn't bumped into him. So I was photographing a friend of his who's an artist. I was having a new exhibition, and he invited me along to the launch, and I thought Bono might be there, and sure enough, he was. So I went over with my iPhone, and I said, "Bono, hi. You know, this." I showed him the iPhone. This is what I'm doing, and I'd love to photograph your bear if you have one. And he said, "I used to have one, but I shot it through the heart when I was a kid." And I thought, you know, I'd always thought, well, he might not have one, or he might have lost it or given it away. So I was a bit deflated, and I saw his wife in the corner, Ali. So I thought, well, I'll ask Ali. And she said, oh, yeah, I still have my one in my mom's house, and I have the girls. I have Jordan's and Eve's. And I'm thinking, oh, this is good. Yeah, I'll get something like that. And then she goes, oh, yeah, and we have this little small one. It's missing an ear. And it belonged to a friend of ours who died. And I said, that's the one I want. So it turns out it belonged to a friend of theirs, Greg Carroll, who you two wrote One Tree Hill on the Joshua Tree. They wrote about Greg, who was tragically killed in a motorbike accident in Ireland. And at his funeral, he was a Maori in New Zealand. One of his friends gave Bono and Ali this little bear that was his. So I walked away from the exhibition, and I suddenly went, oh, Bono does have a bear. Mm. And so it's in the book, Pride of Place.
You know, by the way, we won't be able to cover everything today. Any audio from the voicemail project we don't use, plus photographs of the WNPR staff with their stuffed animals, it'll all be on WNPR.org a little bit later today, along with this show and everything, anything else we can think of. Mark Nixon is with us. We also have another guest. You know, stuffed animals are kind of funny at times, kind of eccentric at times. In some ways, though, they are serious business. It's become a routine practice to give a stuffed animal to a child coming out of a traumatic event, say a house that burns down or something like that. Catherine Pizzacani is the founder and executive director of Project Smile, a nonprofit dedicated to helping children who are victims of traumatic events. Welcome to our show, Catherine.
Thank you for having me.
And I hope I did not mangle your name too badly.
No, you did great.
All right. So tell us, how big a project is this now? How many stuffed animals and stuffed toys are you collecting from people these days?
We've collected over 34,000 stuffed animals, and we're celebrating our 11th anniversary this fall.
And I understand that part of the inspiration for this was a story in 2003 about four brothers who were held basically in captivity by their parents. I'll let you pick up that story.
Yeah, there was a very well-known story. It happened October 2003, and it was four brothers from New Jersey who were starved by their adoptive parents, and it made eventually it made national headlines. When I first read the article, it was only on the cover of the New York Post at the time, but the photo was horrendous. And one of the boys was 14 years old and weighed 40 pounds, and they had just been horrifically abused. And I bought the newspaper to read the story, and in the article it was saying that one of the brothers was given a little stuffed animal by one of the police officers when the police arrived on the scene to take the children away. And the article said that the little boy clung to the stuffed animal, and he wouldn't let it go, and it really comforted him. And so that was where I was inspired to start a collection of stuffed animals up in Massachusetts, where I live and work, in order for police to give to children that are in maybe not quite as extreme situations, but all the other range of traumatic events that happen to kids, unfortunately, on a daily basis.
And is this something that emergency responders just kind of know about now? I mean, do you have to spend any time acquainting emergency responders, police, or EMTs with the notion that this really is something that's just innately helpful?
It depends on the department. Right now we work with, over the 11 years, we've partnered with 191 police and fire departments, majority of which are in New England, but we donate to other departments across the country as well. So no, we don't necessarily have to spend a lot of time. Like, I think most emergency responders understand why a stuffed animal is so important and how it benefits children. We do spend some time just kind of, you know, updating the departments about what our efforts are, and there's no charge to them, and just kind of reminding them of how a stuffed animal does make such a difference for a child.
And one thing that's going to pop into the minds of some listeners who are with us right now is how to donate to you. So explain what people do if they hear this story and it makes complete sense to them. How do they get to Project Smile?
Yeah, it's very easy. I go on our website, projectsmile.org. You have to go to .org. If you go to projectsmile.com, it's something completely different. But go to projectsmile.org, and they can read all about Project Smile. And if they go on the Help Us page, they can find out ways to volunteer, get involved in upcoming events, to send donations of stuffed animals, make financial donations online, join our website, our email news. There's tons of ways to get involved.
You know, it's an odd thing that you're doing, because I'm assuming that 97% of the time, you just never know where this stuffed animal, any given of the 34,000 stuffed animals, where they wind up, how they get used, who they help, what kind of effect they have. Do you ever sort of hear back, like, oh, yes, my child was in situation X and that stuffed animal got into her hands? Do you ever get to hear some story like that?
Yeah, I do. I don't get to hear too many of the stories. And I always, you always do kind of wonder where they are going to go and, you know, which children are going to end up with the stuffed animals. But, yeah, I've been fortunate that I do get to hear a couple of the stories. We got an email. We've had a couple of emails, actually, from mothers whose children receive stuffed animals for Project Smile. And also, we also give out coloring books and books and crayons as well. And there was one mom whose email always stood out, because she and her husband and their 8-year-old daughter were involved in a car accident. They were rear-ended on a highway off-ramp. And the state police came, and they gave the child a stuffed animal. The fire department came, and they gave her a little coloring book and crayons. And she went on our website, and she took the time to send me an email to let me know that what a difference it made for her daughter. She said the little girl was crying, and she was really upset when the accident first happened. And thankfully, nobody was seriously injured. But it was still a pretty scary thing to be in a car accident, especially for a child. And she's like, you know, I just want to let you know that it made such a difference to my daughter to get that stuffed animal.
Mark Nixon, this could be no surprise to you, right? That one of the roles that these animals play, these stuffed animals play, as sort of an immediate healer of trauma.
I don't know what to say to that, Colin.
While you're thinking what you do want to say, and it's rare for an Irishman not to know what he wants to say right away, but let me grab a call from Aaron, who actually also has something kind of that's right on point here. Hi, Aaron.
Hi, how you doing?
Just fine. You're on the air. Go ahead. Fire away.
Oh, very cool. Yeah. So I called in to share a little bit about a project I've been working on for the past 5 years, basically to create interactive teddy bears for children who are newly diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. And so it all started actually from going into the homes of families and observing that when these children were newly diagnosed, they actually started taking care of their stuffed animals as if they had diabetes. Mm-hmm. So they would prick the fingers of their teddy bears. You know, they would draw little insulin pumps and pieces of paper and pretend that they actually had diabetes. And so we asked ourselves whether we could bring that experience to life and do it in a way that was educational. And so we created something called Jerry the Bear, which is basically a teddy bear with sensors throughout his body that kids take care of, almost like a diabetic Tamagotchi. So we actually shipped out the first run of these bears last Christmas, and we surprised 2% of all kids who were diagnosed with type 1 diabetes, which was incredibly exciting for us. And so we're about 7 months out from that point, and now we see that kids are still playing with their bears for over an hour a week. They're learning with them. They're learning how to count carbs, get over their fear of insulin injections, and ultimately be empowered to master their own illness.
Well, you know, this, you know, Mark Nixon, this sort of goes back to one of the thoughts that I was having about stuffed animals, even looking at your book, Much Loved, which is that, you know, these stuffed animals, they are at times, to quote a poem you wrote, silent witnesses, constant companions, defenders of innocence. But also sometimes they're us, right? They're surrogate versions of us. When we take care of the stuffed animal, we're kind of in the way that Aaron just described. Sometimes we're just kind of taking care of ourselves in a way that we can't really lavish that care directly on to us.
Yeah, I think you're right. I personally just remember those scary moments at night, you know, when there was loud noises going on, or you were just scared of the dark, that you could just hug your teddy bear, and it felt like it was protecting you, you know. So I don't know. It's quite hard to put into words, because they are these primal emotions that just seem to kick in, and some people really get it, and other people don't.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. Some people, but I think children almost always get it. You know, as we get older, our relationship with a stuffed animal may be problematic, but when we're children, we know exactly what they're for and why they're sent to us. Thing, this project that you've done, it's so big, so sprawling, and it's got so many new components. Is there going to be a sequel? Is there going to be Much Loved 2, at least in book form?
I hope so. I would like to do a kind of celebrity or famous people's version, if you like. So I was in London. I shot the first one of those on Monday of this week. I went to London and I photographed the designer Jean-Paul Gaultier's teddy called Nana, which is part of he has an exhibition on in the Barbican Centre in London at the minute of all his fashion. And Nana is part of the exhibition because as a child he put lipstick and conical breasts on his teddy, and these eventually ended up on Madonna's outfit
I was wondering if Madonna was going to surface in this story. I was almost kind of hoping not. Yeah. Hey, Mark Nixon, we really have to go, unfortunately, so that we can squeeze in our one little trip to Japan here. It's been so great to talk to you. And we will have all the other voicemail project audio stories of Brownie and Norman and Benny at WNPR.org. Check us there and email me at Colin, C-O-L-I-N, at WNPR.org if we didn't get your story on the air today.
You got a friend in me. Got a friend in me. Yeah, you got a friend.
Okay, this is weird, but Greg wants me to feed these little toy carrots to Mr. Scroopy, a stuffed bunny. Here you go, Mr. Scroopy. Ow, ow, ow! He's biting me! Let go! Let go! You vicious little... Today's show was produced by Katie Pikus, Betsy Kaplan, and me. Our other intern today is Josh Nalea. Greg Hill appeared in the intro and tweets for us at WNPR Colin. The part of Bill Curry was played by Chucky. For show pages, articles, and Faith Middleton Show staff recipes for cooking stuffed animals, visit our website, WNPR.org. On tomorrow's show, Jacques Lamar, James Hanley, and Doobie McDowell will be on the nose. And now, back to Colin.
So maybe you have a stuffed animal or a stuffed toy that sits on your bed all day while you go to work. That animal, that stuffed toy, could use a change of scene, could use a little variety in its life. There is a way of addressing that, and it comes in the form of Sonoe Azuma, founder and CEO of Unagi Travel. She lives in Japan. She operates the travel service in Japan. The travel service is for stuffed toys. Sonoe Azuma, welcome to our show.
Thank you very much for having me.
So this all began with your own stuffed toy, right? Your own stuffed eel and unagi.
Yes, that's right. It happened 7 years ago. I created a stuffed eel for myself and started to take photos and blog about it. My friend started to say, hey, I'm going on a business trip and I'll take your stuffed eel with me. So the stuffed eel started to travel around the world, and I started to receive photos such as stuffed eel in front of Empire State Building or visiting Paris. I thought it was just simply fun, and people who cannot physically travel would appreciate this kind of service, so I started a business.
So this is a travel agency in which people give you their stuffed animals to take on trips. So tell us about some of your clients. Who are your customers? Give us some specific examples of clients.
My clients are people who cannot physically travel, such as people who are in wheelchairs, or children who are facing difficulties, or people who are from a low-income family, or people who are just simply having fun with stuffed animals. Some come just to learn about Japan. My non-Japanese customers, some are like interested in anime and Japanese culture, and they want to know more about Japan through their stuffed animals.
I think I saw a photo of an eagle from New Mexico, from an elementary school in New Mexico.
Yes.
Can you tell me about that?
It was last December, a school teacher emailed me and said she wants to have a stuffed eagle travel on behalf of her third grade class. And she said the public school is located in a low-income family's region, and most of the children don't have an opportunity to travel around. So she wanted to have that eagle to travel to Japan and to see the world and to inspire their third grade class. She didn't have the money to have the eagle to come to Japan. And I said, take your time, and maybe if you have the chance to fundraise, I'll wait for a month or so. One day, a lady based in Boston emailed me and said she wants to offer a donation, $100, for stuffed animals who don't have enough money. So I offered that donation to school. So the eagle was happily able to travel to Japan.
So I'm trying to picture what your life is like and what your travels are like. I'm assuming that you're on a train with, what, five or six stuffed animals?
Yes, that's right.
People who have stuffed animals are often very, very protective of those stuffed animals. I mean, if it's a special stuffed animal or stuffed toy, they probably want it treated a certain way. Do you have to promise them certain things about how the stuffed animal is going to live and how it's going to be treated while you have it?
Yes, I tell them that I will only bring like 5 to 6 stuffed animals on a tour so that I can treat them in a way that they would treat their stuffed animals. I don't put the stuffed animals directly on the ground. I put a towel, and then I'll try not to make it dirty. And I also take photos almost every single day of every stuffed animals and post it on Facebook and Twitter so that the owners can see that their stuffed animals are treated well.
Do you ever get a stuffed animal who has been loved and owned so much that he's starting to fall apart? I mean, that actually does happen to stuffed animals that people keep for years and years. Do you have those that are very fragile that you have to be extra careful with?
There was one stuffed animal whose owner was over 70 years old. So the owner had the stuffed animals for a very long time, more than 60 years. I tried to take care of the stuffed animals carefully, but it didn't fall apart, so it was okay. So far, nothing happened to the stuffed animals, but I tried to take good care of them.
When we talk about stuffed animals, there's your eel, there's the eagle. I'm assuming there are some bears, but are there all kinds of animals? What are the most unusual stuffed animals that you've traveled with?
It wasn't actually an animal. It was an American football player, Peyton Manning. That doll came. So that was the most unusual stuffed doll that came to Tokyo.
And where did you take Peyton Manning?
I took Peyton Manning to a Tokyo tour. So we visited like the famous shrines and also went up to Tokyo Tower.
You know, this all sounds kind of funny, but it's also mm-hmm. very serious. There are people, as you say, who are physically challenged, who can't travel. Mm-hmm. And I would imagine there are some people who are psychologically challenged, people who are afraid to travel, but can do it through a stuffed animal. Am I right?
Some of my clients have some psychological issues, and some cannot go outside their homes. They just stay inside and don't have many friends, or they can't go out to work. But they can send their stuffed animals and travel through the stuffed animals.
Does that sometimes also make a difference in their lives? I mean, maybe if the stuffed animal can go out and go some places, the person who feels psychologically trapped could feel mm-hmm. a little bit more courageous about going out.
One of my clients who was in her late 20s had a problem. She couldn't go to work, and she was just trapped in her house. And she wasn't able to communicate with her friends, and she was afraid to check friends' Facebook pages because she was just jealous about their lives, and she was not confident in herself. But one day she sent her small bear to Tokyo, and she saw the bear communicating with other stuffed animals, and she thought that she could also meet with people and start communicating. So after the trip, she was able to go back to work, and she was really thankful for the tour that I provided for her.
We're talking to Sunoe Azuma of Unagi Travel. She's the founder and CEO. So the way this has worked so far is that people mm-hmm. send you their stuffed animals, and those stuffed animals travel around Japan. You speak very good English. I'm imagining that you might be thinking at some point of taking some stuffed animals from Japan to perhaps the United States?
Yes. Many of my Japanese clients are hoping that I would start doing tours such as New York tour or to San Francisco and to other cities in the United States. But so far, I haven't been able to do those tours because, of course, it would take more money and more time to travel around. So I am currently thinking several ways to do tours to U.S. One is a partnership with people who are based in the United States mm-hmm. and who are able to travel and to take around the stuffed animals or to get sponsors from the government or companies.
When you travel in Japan with 5 or 6 stuffed animals on a train, mm-hmm. do people mm-hmm. ever give you peculiar looks? Do people ever look at you and say, why is this woman on the train? She's a grown-up woman. What is she doing with 6 stuffed animals?
Yes. I get those kind of looks, but thanks to Japanese TV and Japanese newspaper, Unagi Travel have been pretty much known to the domestic market, so people will come to me and say, keep up the good work. So right now I don't have any issues, but when I started it, people did give me those kind of looks, and sometimes I get questioned by police officers.
When I was in Japan, one thing that a lot of people liked to do was to go to mm-hmm. hot springs. Japan has these wonderful hot springs. Is that something that the stuffed animals want to do?
Yes, that's right. I have an onsen tour. Onsen means hot spring in Japanese. And I take the stuffed animals to hot spring. And I don't soak them in the water, but I try to take the photo as if the stuffed animals are enjoying the hot spring.
That sounds wonderful. Roughly how much does it cost to have your animal, say, go on a little trip in Japan, maybe go to a hot spring? How much would you charge me for that?
Roughly about $50 US.
That seems very reasonable. All right, well, Sunoe Azuma, it has been so much fun to talk to you, and it sounds like a wonderful thing you're doing, and it is funny, but it's also very serious, very important to people who can't make that trip, but their stuffed animals can. Thank you so much. Arigato.